Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. The Clark Hulings Fund exists to provide training, introductions, and funding for working artists to turn working artists into thriving artists.
I'm Daniel DeGree, your host. Our guests today are Bette Ridgway and Sue Roderick. Bette is a working artist, gallery owner, graphic designer, and author of the best-selling book, Talent is Just the Beginning, An Artist's Guide to Marketing in the 21st Century. Sue is vice president for marketing for the Messenger Art Collection, one of the largest, most diverse private collections in the U.S. Together, Bette and Sue run Ridgway and Roderick Art Services, which provides career evaluation and planning to artists. Bette and Sue, welcome.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you for having us.
Bette, you're an artist, and Sue, you're an art professional. So tell me, how did you bridge the gap between those two distinct roles to create a consulting business?
Well, as an artist for more than 30 years, I've been showing my work all over the world, and I came to know Sue in the early 2000s as a business person. She was repping an artist that I was selling to a gallery, and she was one of the most unusual, most articulate, and most professional reps I had ever met. So I began to pick her brain and talk to her about her methodology in dealing with artists, finding galleries for them, preparing artists for showing in various spaces, and we developed a friendship. And over time, she began to take an interest in my work, and she has placed me in many galleries, and we have put together what I believe are some very meaningful tools for other artists to be shown and to be successful in their areas.
So let me ask you this. What made you decide to create a company that targets career development and marketing for artists? You know, it's one thing to see the sort of the direction you need to go, but it's another thing to say, I need to do this, and I need to build a business practice around it.
Well, I think that through our own experiences, and Sue in particular representing many artists, we began to get phone calls and emails from artists asking for our help. And we began to look at how we could deliver these services a little more efficiently. And we will plan with an artist to make a studio visit. We'll talk to them about their goals and look at what they're doing to achieve those goals. And, of course, everyone's different. Some artists are just doing it for the fun of it, but the ones we deal with are looking for career success. And we've pretty much zeroed in on some important things that artists need to consider as they build their career.
Well, let's ask about that. So what kinds of skills or materials do artists need before they start to market their art? So, for instance, you know, do they need to have put together a cohesive collection? Do they need to do market research and understand their marketplace? Is it a global portfolio? You know, what is it they need to have so they can do this successfully?
You've hit on several different items that are very important for that artist, Daniel. And the first thing that comes to mind for me when I'm talking to any artist is I ask them if they have a stunning website, something that's going to catch the collector's eye. If they don't have that, they're not going to go anywhere in today's world. We're thinking outside of the box with everything we do today. It's a social media situation. We have to engage in this. So that website is the number one thing I'm looking at. After that, I want to make sure that that artist is willing to invest in themselves. Is this going to be a hobby or is it going to be a business? Two different things completely. If they're going to go the business route, then we've got something to work with. Do they have that cohesive group of work, that body of work? I want to know that they have 20 to maybe 30 pieces that are ready to go. I'm going to ask them a lot of questions. I'm going to ask them, where do they want to be in 5 years? Do they have that portfolio? Do they have an artist statement? Do they have a bio? Do they have an exhibition history? They have a list of collectors, very, very important. If they don't have a list, we're going to have to develop one. Are any articles written about you that we need to work with to put on that website? Have you priced your work properly? Have you created a budget for marketing? Also very important. Do you have business cards, a business license, a tax ID? Have you thought about the insurance that you need? So these are the basic things that I'm going to ask right up front, and this will tell me what direction to go for that particular artist once I have those answers.
So in terms of the marketplace, what do artists need to, in order to understand the marketplace better, the market for their art, who's going to buy, who's going to pay attention? You know, in every other business practice, before you set out to sell a product or market a service, you would do market research. You would try to figure out whether people were going to be receptive in the first place. Is that something artists need to think about? Do they resist thinking about it? And if they do need to think about it, how do they dig into that? What do they need to
think about? They most definitely need to think about this, Daniel. You make a very good point. They need to be out there in the public. They need to go to all the museum shows, the gallery shows. They need to network. They need to put their face in front of all these wonderful artists that are out there. Get to know them. Ask them questions. Ask the successful artists, what are they doing that maybe they're not doing? So it's a social media type of thing. And put yourself right in front of everybody. And I think if you do that, people will recognize you and your name will get around and they'll get used to seeing you. And at that point, you're starting to do what you need to find the answers as to what needs to be done to make sure that you're out and about and you can sell your work.
Well, so let's talk about, you know, how it may have changed over the years, marketing, from an artist's perspective. I mean, first, has there been an evolution? I mean, we've seen the growth of social media. Everybody gets that, right? And we get that we've moved from the era of the cassette tape to the era of, you know, the mobile website and so on. But has the methodology, the mentality, have the challenges evolved that artists have to face now in order to market themselves effectively? Does it go beyond just having a good website?
Well, I think you nailed it. A website is just the beginning, as you know, and it must be mobile. The websites that I design for artists can be seen in languages all over the world. So in other words, if someone in Thailand opens my website, it comes up in their language. Collectors are all over the world now, and we sell all over the world. The social networking is important, but it's not at the top of my list. We've actually entered a third layer of digital marketing. First, it was the website. Then it was the social networking. And now we're developing community. That's the big trend now, where, for example, I send out a monthly newsletter. I'm developing that as a communication tool that is sent out to my collectors, my students, designers, architects, and there's feedback from that. They can be invited to showings I'm having or open studios I'm having, and there's more of a dialogue, there's more interaction. So this we take very seriously as a service to the artists that we work with. We talk to them about how they're developing their community, and artists traditionally, and I'm one of them, like to be in our studios. We like to just paint. And we would love someone to come in and just tap us on the shoulder and say, I'm going to make you a star. Well, you and I know that doesn't happen, at least not very much anymore. And so it's really up to the artist to figure out a way to get seen by the right people. And there are a lot of ways to do that. Right now, the hospitality market is booming all over the world. So artists need to get their portfolios out to design houses, to architecture firms, to get on various lists so that they come up when, say, for example, you're a designer and you're looking for something for a hotel lobby and it needs to be a certain size and a certain palette. So you start Googling around and looking online to work. Well, I tell artists, Google yourself, see what comes up. Click on images, see what images come up. That is your portfolio, so it has to be impeccable and interesting. So we're talking about many layers of marketing that needs to go on. The name recognition, how do people find you, going back to basics. A stunning portfolio is a must. It's a given. It has to be.
So how does an artist create a brand in the if what we do is we Google a given artist and we see a lot of images, those images can, you know, they're sort of like random. If galleries and museums hung random images next to each other that didn't seem to have a relationship, if we hung a Vermeer next to a Van Gogh, you know, that's what you get in Google. So So when you Google images, so if an artist needs to build a brand, how do they get past just what shows up in search results and actually define themselves in an era where search and social are so important?
Well, that goes back to the basic concept of having a distinctive look to your work, so that when I see it, I say, oh, that's a Heidi Lowe in porcelain. I identify the style or the colors or the palette. And it's very difficult. You know, this is a world where you have millions of artists all trying to find their style, their voice, a distinctive look, and it's not easy. It doesn't happen very often. But this is where, when I work with students, I help them try to find their voice to do something that is so unique to their own work. And then, of course, we talk about what is your most valuable asset. Well, it's when I say Picasso, an image will come up in your head. You'll see something that he did or many things that he did in his lifetime. If I say Jackson Pollock, an image comes up in your head. If I say Sue Roderick, I see an image. And this is what we work with artists so that they can discover how to brand themselves, how to design a logo. As a visual artist, everything they do should be visually appealing. Their business card should be stunning. There should be a uniqueness about everything they do. And I think Sue agrees with me. We've worked with many artists to do this. It's kind of fun. We have a good time with that aspect.
How does an artist go about cultivating art collectors? I mean, first, is it important to have collectors in sort of your purview? Do you need to make contact with collectors? Do you need to have some means or method of building a circle around you of people who aren't just other artists and sort of create an atmosphere of repeat customers? Or is that not a major challenge? Is there something else that sort of gets you there if you just focus on that?
No, it should come naturally. Collectors, someone who buys your work is not just buying something to hang on the wall. They're interested in who did it and how they did it. And it's important, if you have access to their name and address, to send them a little card thanking them for purchasing whatever they bought in the gallery. If they come to your studio and they buy something, you get them on your mailing list for your newsletter. When I have a big collector, I actually send them a big coffee table book that is signed to them that they actually do put on their coffee table that has all my work for the last 40 years. Other people I know will do a sketch and frame it or do something that connects you to that collector for a long period of time. Nurturing our collectors is a very big part of our marketing plan. And we work with artists to help them design a way to say thank you or to reach out or to do something special for their collectors once a year, even a Christmas card that they've made that they inscribe and send out to their collectors. It's very important.
So what about the emotional barrier? You know, as we talk about these things, I can't help but guess that a lot of artists are feeling like there is a strong distinction between the thing that drives and motivates them as creative people, as art producers, versus the business concerns, which can seem like, yes, I know I have to do that, but it's like, I know I have to eat healthy, I know I have to exercise, I know I should actually rotate the tires on my car once in a while, but, you know, asking me to focus on that, it's not where the passion lies, it's not where the music's playing. So how can artists, does that emotional barrier exist in your experience, and how can artists, what do they have to do internally to overcome that?
We do come up against that, Daniel, in a lot of our business with artists, but as I begin to work with them, I see the depth of their creativity, and that is essential to who they are. The notion that I plant in an artist's head is, you can also be creative about the way you run your business. It doesn't mean that you walk out the studio door having created some beautiful paintings and flip that creative sense off. You can take that creativity into the office too, so for your business, to look at how to creatively approach a gallery. Galleries is a different breed of cat right now. You don't go into a gallery like in the old days with a notebook full of slides or pictures. You go in with an iPad, and If they have time, you can flip through. You have an app on the iPad with your images. There are creative ways to even find a representative to work with you, to rep your work in many areas. I suggest to artists, many artists, that they start at the local level, begin to go to all the shows, find ways to get seen, have a little in studio once in a while, maybe over a holiday. Begin to be known as the local artist and then work on the regional level. Look at larger galleries in larger cities that are not far away and work through the system so that you get seen by a larger audience. Then you can look at being more national and international. It's just like any other business. You invest, you have a plan, you stick to the plan, you get input from people who are professionals. And if it's approached in that way, the success will happen. It's like any other business. You wouldn't open a retail store in downtown wherever without having a marketing budget, without having a staff, without having a plan, without having some software to send out newsletters. It's a question of investing in yourself. So if we're talking to artists who want to be thriving, Sue and I kind of have a model, a motto, and that is, if you believe in your creativity, invest in yourself.
So this show is called The Thriving Artist. Can you tell us, what does it mean? Can each of you tell us, what does it mean to be a thriving artist to you? What does it take to thrive? You know, we all know what a working artist is, somebody that makes a living from their work. And we all want to do that if we're in the arts business, but we want to do more than that. We want to enjoy our lives. We want to thrive. So, and I don't want to describe that for you. Can you describe that for our audience?
I think if you're going to be a thriving artist, it's going to go back to making yourself be apart from everybody else. You've got to have maybe a different color palette, maybe different materials, different process, be distinctive in what you're doing. If you can do that and then go out and promote yourself in visible media, in the internet, through the websites, you'll get noticed. And for me, this is Bette again. I can describe myself as a thriving artist, but I have many ways of creating income. All of my income has a creative base. The DVDs I sell, the books I sell, the painting, the licensing that I do off of my images. There are many ways for an artist to create a very successful life and to enjoy the creativity that goes along with it and the people, the connections, the networking. I help a lot of artists discover new ways to generate income. They may teach, they may have workshops, and I say, why don't you film it? Make it into a DVD and have it downloadable on your website. And people will pay for that. So we look everywhere to find new ways for artists to make a living.
So Sue and Bette, let me ask you a fun question. From the time you first started in the business you run now, if you knew then what you know now and could go back and do one thing differently, can each of you tell us what that thing might be?
A wonderful website. That's the most important thing still. And this is Bette. I would say learn to be self-sufficient. Learn how to photograph your work. It's not that difficult. Learn how to do some of the business things that are required. Learn to do your own book. Keep track of your expenses. Learn how to do your taxes. Learn how to file the state sales tax that you collect on works you sell in your studio. I've run into so many artists who are just hopelessly inadequate because they feel that making the art is enough, but they have to pay a lot of people to do these other kinds of things. So I say become resourceful. Look to getting some help. There's a lot of help out there. You spend an hour with a good representative or consultant, they can help you get on track. It's well worth the effort.
You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Healings Fund for Visual Artists. For more information on Bette and Sue's business services, visit rnrartservices.com. That link and other information is available on the Clark Healings Fund website in the notes for this podcast episode. For more information on the fund, visit clarkhealingsfund.org. And be sure and follow our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Bette and Sue. It's been really great having you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.